Let's go.
Welcome to Micromobility, a podcast exploring the disruptive potential of small electric vehicles. We cover the best companies building these amazing new vehicles, as well as topics relevant to how they impact people, cities, and our planet. My name is Oliver Bruce, an investor in mobility and climate tech, and my co-host is Horace Dedieu, founder of Asimco.com and Micromobility Industries. Hey team, Oliver here. This week I am releasing a session from our recent Micromobility Europe show held in Amsterdam on June 8th and 9th. This one is on the rise of subscription, and it was a panel hosted by John Woodruff from Two Tone, with some of the titans of the e-bike sharing world, including Eric Quadinus Walforce, founder of Dance, Kariana Solfeed-Eid from Wii, and Richard Berger from Swapfeeds, all of whom I have had on the podcast in the past, all of whom are joined by Teet Prax from CoModule. This was an excellent session covering the dynamics of this part of the industry, what's working, what's not, and where these folks think that the industry is going. And with that, here is the panel.
Let's go.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. I think more people are going to make their way finishing lunch. My name is John Woodruff. I have a company here called Two Tone. We do PR marketing mostly for bikes, but I think here I should say also micromobility because it's not just bikes. To my left, I have Richard Berger, founder of Swapfeeds.
Yep, that's me.
From here in the Netherlands, from Delft.
Exactly.
Very cool. Carrie-Anne Sofjeld, co-founder, CPO of Wii from Oslo, Norway. We've got Teet Prax, co-founder and CEO of CoModule from Tallinn, Estonia. Thank you. And Eric Quindinus Valforce, co-founder and CEO of Dance from Berlin. Thank you, guys. I'm just going to dive right into the first question. Something I've seen in my travels in the United States, where I'm originally from, but also here in Europe, certainly for anyone that's here from Amsterdam, knows several years ago, there actually was quite a backlash for bike share platforms here in the city. I know Amsterdam's kind of unique in that way, but my overall ultimate initial point is a trend that I've seen is there's been a move from sharing platforms to more subscription-based platforms for mobility. So I was going to pass it to you guys, if I could just raise your hands. How have you found this development from ride sharing or bike sharing to subscription?
Yeah, I can kick it off right away. I think Swapfeeds is started in 2014, and I think the let's say the bike boom in Asia, the bike sharing boom in Asia started or was really in at its peak in 2017. So not sure who started earlier there, but indeed, I think first of all opened up a lot of eyes for consumers that there are different ways to use a bike. First of all, you have bike ownership. That was the only one that was existing, and I think bike sharing opened up other opportunities. And as every model has its upsides and its downsides, I think also people quickly learned the upsides and downsides of bike sharing. And yeah, we believe that the bike subscription model is kind of the best of both worlds in that sense. So I think when people started to realize that, that also drove more, let's say, consumers into the subscription market. So I think it did pave the way partially for also this new business model.
And maybe it was also around the same time that a lot of other subscription services, like software as a service, things were really also taking off. Like it was something that people were also used to, but maybe not for something tangible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be.
It's a broader market trend, right? You basically have multiple giant categories that are transforming where people are preferring to subscribe to products and services. And I think the bike is just an amazing example of that, where it just makes total sense. And I think it's going to be, many millions of subscribers. So you have, in Europe alone, you have like many tens of millions of people riding bikes today, and that market is growing. And everything is shifting to e-bikes. E-bikes are hard to maintain, and it's just a headache to own them. So it makes total sense to have sort of this technology-enabled full-stack solution, right?
And to provide a bit of a different perspective to it, we have been working as a CoModule, being a partner for many of the shared mobility companies, subscription companies, but also companies that do bikes for owning. What we've seen, we've been working in that industry for 9 years, and for us, really, a big growth came from scooter sharing because we were uniquely positioned to offer IoT for those little vehicles, scooters and bikes. And I feel that each of those different business models and even modalities, regardless if it's a bike or a scooter, if it's a owned bike or subscription bike or a shared bike, we have to give credit to each one of them, because each one of those business models and types of modalities help to bring different types of population on bikes and scooters. And eventually, if our mission is to get more people on bikes and scooters, then I think each business model has its benefits. And I think why subscription is really booming at this moment is that scooter sharing was very big. There was a lot of venture capital money poured into that. Then over the past few years, we've seen really a tremendous boom in the retail market as well, where it has we've really felt that it has been a gold rush over the past few years in the e-bike market, because there has been such a big demand from the general population. And I think now what subscription companies do is that if there are people walking around and thinking that, hey, I would like to buy a certain bike or a scooter, but I'm not willing to invest in pay out immediately a couple of thousands of euros for an e-bike, and then subscription is something that enables me to really test it out. And also the subscription companies, they take care of the repair and maintenance and everything that comes along with owning the bike, but they really make it easy and helping really to get different type of population on bikes and scooters. So I think we have to give credit to each one of them. The subscription is really the one that helps to accelerate the next growth, I believe, for micromobility.
I think that's a great point. That's actually a good lead into my second question, more about the economics of this pivot. And it does vary city to city, because a lot of rideshare programs are still quite successful in some cities. It also depends maybe on the kind of bike or vehicle that you want to ride. I think, Carry-On, in your case, you guys do cargo bikes. In some cases, cargo bikes are comparably priced to what some people might pay for a car. So maybe you want to weigh in on kind of like the economics of how that makes more sense for a subscription-based model.
Yeah, I mean, we're a cargo bike-only subscription company. And we are, if you flip the whole thing around, we were sort of built to solve a problem, which is how do you move more than yourself without the car? If you have like children, if you have some need for a car, and from experience, we knew that cargo bikes will do this. It's difficult for people to understand that it does, but it has this like massive potential to actually move way more people than it does today. So we looked at the transportation research and sort of what kind of barriers people have towards actually using a cargo bike. And we also within this looked at how sharing cargo bikes doesn't really cut it, because so many people have a car they use so little, and it's because of the availability 24/7 and the ability to customize it with like child seats and everything you need in your everyday life.
Sure.
And sharing in that sort of period of time in your life where you need this reliability is for like the idealists or the weirdos. So myself included. So you need to have it available at all times, and that's where subscription becomes this good solution. And it also takes down the barrier to getting aboard, but it also, because as Eric says, that e-bikes are a nightmare to maintain, it sort of the value of the service increases over time, because you have all of this sort of reliability and help and sort of backing from the service within.
It's hard to put a cargo bike in a bike stand sometimes.
That's absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It makes me think with swap feeds, maybe this is like urban folklore, but when you guys first launched, because here it's quite common, people have seen that riding around, to have someone sitting on the back, or in your case, the front of the bike.
Yep.
And you guys didn't really want that to happen, but it's super normal culturally for someone to sit on the bike rack.
It's a bit romantic and picking up your partner and on the bike. It is possible. In the end, I think also the point that you're trying to make is we really need to design the bike for subscription. Mm. Right? It's kind of, you use your own bike, it feels like your own bike. At the same time, it needs to be easy to change out, or easy to maintain, or easy to, let's say, repair. So the challenge is to build a very robust bike that feels like your own bike. And how we looked indeed towards the bike, like how is it used? How is it breaking down? Can we motivate certain behavior? Can we demotivate certain behavior? And it still feels like your own comfortable bike while it lasts very long. And I think if you talk about profitability in that sense, yeah, that's really something that really we need to own. Yeah. Really something that we need to design a bike that lasts for a very long time and is very comfortable to ride. The things that we have in common with all the sharing concept is, of course, efficient operations, bike recovery capability, know your customer, all those things we need to own and be a champion in as a subscription company as well. And on top of that, it's a radically different design towards the product.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think with CoModule, have you guys seen, because you obviously work with bike share platforms for like fleet management and a lot of like the nuts and bolts or the secret sauce of how the bikes work. Have you seen subscription outpacing it, even though you were kind of like defending both have their place, but are we on to something?
Well, I believe that we are definitely riding the wave of a subscription as of today, because as it has been simply an organic growth coming from shared mobility. A lot of shared mobility companies are struggling these days, and I think that they have struggles, but because they really tried to do blitz scaling for shared mobility, which really didn't work. Then there was a huge retail adoption and boom, and which was where we have to definitely give credit to those sharing mobility companies, but also to the COVID that people wanted to commute more on bikes and scooters. And now we're in this subscription where a subscription simply takes off the friction from people to purchase an e-bike, because you don't have this upfront cost. You don't have to worry about theft, because if you put a couple of dozen euros into purchasing a bike and then you lose it next day, then that's a lot of money. So, and also people who purchase urban bikes in many areas of the world, except Amsterdam, they don't know how to maintain bikes. So also subscription companies are offering that service. So in that sense, absolutely, we are onto something. But I think there's also a lot of similarities between subscription and sharing. Both of them have incentives to build reliable vehicles, because the longer they live on the streets, the better the unit economics are. And so, and also where IoT comes in, they need to really recover the assets if they're stolen. They need to prevent the vehicles being stolen. They require over-the-air updates so that vehicles could be maintained for the longer period of time, so that they wouldn't have to be called back to the service, etc. And also predictive maintenance, doing that based on the data that can be collected from the vehicles.
I mean, you asked about the model, right? And I built a artist-powered music streaming service before called SoundCloud, and we had millions of subscribers. And after more than 10 years of working on that, the roadmap for subscription was sort of seemingly endless. It was just, we were still at day one. So there's a lot you can do around the subscription stack and basically using technology. And how do you optimize that over time and through bundling, partnerships, through all the blocking and tackling, through technology, right? So, and CRM, there's just so many pieces to it. And it's very different from sharing and retail. And it's a fundamentally better model, because you have this compounding effect of just recurring revenues that just keep scaling up. And then at some point, as you talked about, if you have a vehicle that lasts long, at some point you have this very high margin vehicle that just sort of keeps throwing off more and more revenue for you. And so it becomes this economic engine that you can just use to fuel expansion. So it's a very attractive model, and it's much more capital efficient if you compare to like sharing, where you have all the bad stuff, the seasonality and like all the unpredictability around it.
Because I was curious about your experience in Berlin. I've been in Berlin pretty regularly. Like, I think there is pretty successful bike share, ride share programs, also with the Deutsche Bahn. It's becoming more and more normal for people to ride there. So coming in with Dance, like,
yeah.
How have you found that?
Well, I mean, in all the markets where we operate, so we're in Berlin, Hamburg, Munich, Vienna, and Paris. They're very, like, very healthy schemes, working. But if you stand on a street corner and you look at, the vehicles going by there, you will see that only, kind of 15% whatever of the rides are shared rides, even in these, very established cities where you have these great schemes. And I mean, I've been a huge fan of those services since they started. And I used them, but eventually just sort of gravitated more and more back to I use my own thing, you know, and that's what most people do ultimately. So I think that's the real issue with the sharing services. They just have a fundamentally broader lack of product market fit, where the promises, you know, the billions that were invested, they just made the promise of a larger share of that pie. But it's unfortunately just not sort of panning out in that way. And I think that's very hard fundamentally to overcome for those services. And so then, you know, this third pillar of subscription where you get sort of best of both and you can use all of the new tech and all of those things to drive that. It's just going to be, I think it's very clear that that's going to be a third pillar, a very meaningful pillar next to these other two.
It's a different user group. So for sure, it will remain part of the mix, right? And I think what we also see, especially in the more developing cycling cultures, we see people really moving from, if they use sharing on a day-to-day basis, they move more towards subscriptions. And at the same time, for more existing cycling cultures, you see more people moving from ownership to subscription because they both know the downsides of both models.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But still, I also still use sharing when I go to Berlin and I'm only there for one day. Of course, I'll use
or
it there.
OV feeds if you don't want to bring your bike on the train.
Yeah, exactly.
Another good segue into our third question, because this all sounds really nice about subscription-based models or platforms, but there has to be some downsides as well. Maybe Kerri-Ann, you want to start with that?
I mean, compared to Dance and Swap Fits, we're like tiny, and being a tiny company and quite new company, asset financing is always challenging, especially when the vehicles that cost the same as a secondhand car aren't really perceived as a financial object in the sort of banking world. That has proven challenging to us. And when we started out in 2020, we felt or had the sort of feedback that this will come within, but it still hasn't sort of clicked completely for us. So that's something that we're working a lot with. And so asset financing is actually the biggest hurdle to take out the potential in the market for on our side.
Eric and Richard, have you had a similar experience?
I mean, as with any business, I remember when we started SoundCloud, you know, everyone was making this very smart observation. They were saying, you know, you're going to have two very big problems. You're going to have powerful suppliers, you know, the major labels, right? They basically own most of music. And then you're going to have incredibly tough competition because you have all of the tech giants that are probably going to sort of lean into this space in one way. Sure enough, 15 years later, I mean, that's basically what it is. And those are the things that all those businesses are kind of grappling with. And I think here's the same. You know, basically there are a bunch of big downsides. I think fundamentally you need scale for this thing to really work. And so I think there's a kind of race to scale here, like you need to do that. And there are a number of other, you know, challenges. I think for me, coming more from like a purely software sort of world, the whole operational hardware, I mean, supply chain, I mean, there's just a long list of headaches. I mean, big challenges that come on top of just building, you know, nice software and great sort of consumer and brand and all of those other things, right? So it's a very tough and challenging business, but that of course builds a moat, right? You, like, over time we're going to have amazing hardware, software and operations that you basically can't compete with either on the local or the global scale. So there's a lot of work to kind of get the model to fly fully and get, you know, the nice margins and all of that stuff, but you can get there, and it's a scale function mostly.
Yeah, maybe also one thing to add is it is a new model, right? So in mobility, it's quite a new model to have a monthly fixed fee for using your own bike. So still, that newness needs a lot of explaining, also towards investors, also towards consumers, to any city partners saying, no, we don't necessarily need a permit because it's their own bike. So there's a lot of explaining in that as well. And I think that's also one of the challenges that we face. We still, like, we now exist for 9 years. We still, our recent campaign was own the city, not the bike. Again, explaining what is the subscription model actually. So I think that from there, outside all the elements, of course, Eric mentions that we also encounter, there's on the consumer side still also a lot of work to do, actually. Yeah,
definitely. I think because market by market, there's a different interpretation of of riding. In some places, it's more of a statement. Some people identify more with their bike. The bike that they're riding is also a statement. Yeah. You know, so that's that just varies. Did you have anything you want to add to that?
Another perspective again to look at it is that from one side, every one of you who is running the subscription service is mentioning that asset financing is challenging. Then I think that it's positive that you're looking that it's challenging, because I think something that also killed all of those, or let's say killed the success of many of the shared mobility services, is that they raised an equity capital in order to deploy into a hardware that they deployed to the streets that didn't have that were not built to be deployed to the streets, actually. So that wasn't sustainable, and they raised equity capital for this. But I presume that when you say raising or doing asset financing, then you're thinking of a loan. And when it comes to having a loan, then I think that's the healthy way to run the subscription, that you may raise equity for business development, but you raise credit to financing or the loan to really expand your fleet size, right? So I think that's a positive trend in the industry, that we're just not raising equity to put into capital that we deploy in the streets. But also to add to this, then financing, I don't have firsthand experience to that, but I know that we have, Comodule has a sister company called Aike that does scooters, and they just recently partnered with a company called Tempo that helps different brands with financing and servicing and repairs. So I think that there are also solutions coming from there. And I think that in order to really gain confidence in the credit facilities to finance those vehicles, then I believe that IoT is also essential. Because what IoT enables to do is that it really enables to decrease the risk of losing the assets, because that's really the worst case for those credit facilities. But also prevention of theft, having IoT inside, but also prevention of, let's say, users running into debt, because what IoT enables to do is that it basically disable a bike or a scooter when users run into debt. So, and first, you can, of course, collect data from the service to prove to the credit facility that, hey, guys, my system is actually working. So I think that's there's solutions to every problem. So
that's positive. we're down to our last few minutes. I think maybe it would be okay if we ask some people in the crowd if there's any questions, if anybody has a question from someone here on the stage. Go ahead. So why hasn't SwapFeeds adopted cargo bikes as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we started our company from two-wheeled pedal bikes. Later, last 2 years, we also added the e-bike to that. And if you look to our 270,000 active subscriptions, we only actually have four bike types. And we optimize a complete operation around that. Transport, service, repairs, all those things around it. And every time we add a new product, you add complexity to that. And as we said in the beginning, having in the end an efficient operations is key in making this model work. Then again, the bug feeds, it's a growing market. There are in high demand, but if you look operationally, we should talk after this. It's quite a challenge to transport, to store, to repair. So before we move into that, a new product, we really need to be careful, like, is the opportunity big enough? Can we fit it inside our operation? All those things. I would not say that we're never going to do it, but for now, it's not on our list.
Okay, I'll maybe give you guys in the last few minutes we have here opportunity to share something what is next. I know it's not going to be Bachfietze for you, but maybe if you guys want to share something that's coming up that people can stay tuned for.
Yeah, so it's not Bachfietze. No, we are this year launching a new product, which is specifically aimed towards delivery markets, and then not necessarily cargo delivery, but more around food and grocery, because we really saw that, okay, it is a big user group. It is a growing user group. It fluctuates. It's, of course, changing over time. And the user profile is completely different. And then again, coming back to designing the bike for the right user profile, that's what we did. I would say stay tuned for later this year.
That's cool. Same blue tire on the front.
Of course.
Carrie-Anne?
Yeah, we're actually just completed the second stage of vertical integration. I mean, we are designing and building our own bike as well.
Cool.
And we have a quite unique perspective in micromobility in our team, I believe, because we have parents and we have also female founders that have this sort of different insight into the gendered or caretaking transportational patterns, which also means that we are in the position where we can design a bike that both has this like premium quality and user experience and accessibility that caters to caretakers, but also with the operational and fleet management perspective and the circularity perspective on the production and operation side.
That's really
so
cool.
So that's it's going to be, I'm really psyched about that.
Wow. Cool. And a co-module?
From our side, we'll continue working with different bike and scooter brands, with subscription companies, and with shared mobility companies, helping to bring more people on bikes and scooters. We'll expand our product portfolio, but nothing super particular to bring out as of now.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been working on some cool partnerships, and I have nothing to announce as of now, but it's just there's some fun stuff in the pipeline. We have on the company side, so we have Bike as a Benefit, we have Google and Urban Sports Club and a couple of other customers, and we're working on some very exciting other ones there that that we're going to be talking about soon. And then we have some other kind of interesting partnerships, you know, in the mobility space as well that we're working with. So yeah, there will be some cool announcements, but I can't talk about them yet.
Cool. At least we have a little bit of a heads up. Yeah, we're down to just our last minute or two. I just wanted to say thank you, guys. It was super interesting for me. I'm definitely a cargo bike nerd, but really interested in how subscription has begun to take off. So this was interesting for me, I think for everybody here in the crowd as well. So thank you guys for joining.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.